Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 202. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, we'll have some more over-unders for you, preview some more Cleveland Guardians coming up this season. We got a new game for Merritt to test his mettle, see how he's going to trivia for the Guardians. And of course, we'll answer some questions. And we'll have hopefully limited spring training, anything, because of spring training it means essentially nothing. But joining me for all that and more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I don't deal in trivial things. I only talk about important stuff, like, like baseball spring training.
Listen, I don't know. I hate it so much. I like that it exists. I think it'd be fun if I was there. It seems like
It's a total blast being there. I like that it's utterly meaningless. It's fucking fantastic. I love it. Yeah.
It's just kind of the. I don't know. It's fine. I'm glad it happens. And I'm glad it exists. It's the fun part where everybody thinks they're a World Series favorite, and there's a lot of fun behind the scenes this time of year. But the games aren't a whole lot. But I guess kind of the good thing is we got the WBC coming up, which
I'm so jazzed for.
It is exciting. Last time was 2017. That was really fun, wasn't it? That was the year Adam Jones was like a superstar for Team USA, right?
Yeah, he was ripping it. He had that sick catch that looks like it could have been showing up on the accidental Renaissance subreddit.
Yeah, that was fun. I'm looking forward to that. There's not many Guardians playing, but you got like Cal Quantrill in Canada, Andres Jimenez, Venezuela, and in the end, it's just about watching all these guys. I feel like this is going to be better than any All-Star. All the games are essentially going to be All-Star games, but there's more pretend stakes, which I think is more fun than.
There was an article in The Guardian today or something like that, maybe yesterday, recently, and it was the headline was just, why are U.S. players treating this like more like a World Cup? Like they're taking it seriously.
They should.
Like Trout and so, well, listen, honestly, I think there's got to be at least a part of it for someone like Mike Trout who, I'm sure that's a man who, in the back of his mind, he looks at the makeup of baseball as a whole and his division specifically and realizes he's never going to win a championship. So maybe he's like, well, I mean, this would be a great way for me to go and win something at least, like.
It's the only chance he's going to have to be on a winning team. And for baseball, like this might be the only chance they have to showcase him in any kind of like championship capacity because the Angels just seem so far away despite everything they have. But
yeah, and also despite being down the road from one of the marquee teams, like you just forget the Angels exist. They have the best player, the most interesting
player.
Two of
the best players, yeah.
Yeah. And also they're in a beautiful area and everyone's like, who? Oh, the team from the movies? The team from Angels in the Outfield? That was pretty good. I like Joseph Gordon.
That isn't a real team. Mike Trout is not a real person. That's a fish.
You can't name a person Trout. That's insane. And
who would do
and
that?
He's really good against the Mariners? Sure, buddy. Okay, I see how this is.
He likes the weather. You're just making stuff up now. That's not a real person.
This is a fake human being. But yeah, I also think there is something to be said for so a lot of these guys have been like, listen, it's really hard to win a championship. Maybe we could win something here. And
yeah,
the more people take it seriously, the better. Like a lot of teams have some really good players. Now, obviously, the DR and us and Venezuela, but like Japan's pretty deep. They got a lot of good pitching, and I don't know. Canada could win a game or two.
Yeah, and I feel like baseball is the one sport where this can work this well too, because you can just sub in anybody after a little bit, and with this many deep players, it's still going to look like a pretty regular baseball game as opposed to like doing football or basketball like this. So
yeah,
I'm excited about that. I'm also obviously excited about over unders, Merritt.
Same.
Starting
gambling.
With the injured Sam Henches, who
has
a bum shoulder. We're kind of going backwards, but I mean, you started this one today, so we might as well talk about him. And it's kind of the only news of spring training so far is that Sam Henches, shoulder inflammation. They said he's being evaluated week by week, which seems kind of bad. he's not going to be around anytime soon kind of thing, but we don't know for sure. He could just miss a few weeks and be back, and it'll be a blip. I'll let you mostly handle this over-under. Said you just wrote it, but he's just kind of like a a guy that found himself and now all of a sudden his injury could put a season in jeopardy a little bit.
Yeah, he was probably their second best relief pitcher last year, just in terms of the fact that he was so effective against lefties, but then just turned into just overall great. Like, if him and Stefan is kind of a coin flip, who was better? But they were so good just as a unit, and losing him sucks because, again, even if he's your third best, that's truly incredible. You have Class A just kind of, you know, holding down ninth, and you can go Stefan Henches or Henches Stefan for 7-8 and mix and match that way. Now we have to start counting a bit, you know, assuming the worst, which is always a fun thing to do. Suddenly guys like, I don't know, Karinchak or Sandlin or De Los Santos or Eli Morgan, like we're really counting them to make a bit of a leap here for them to find something extra from one of these guys. But one of their strengths last year was that. And now him having a shoulder injury is, you know, shoulder injuries are always the worst thing to happen to a pitcher because, you know, the elbow, worst case scenario, you blow a tendon, you get it stapled back in there. When you start messing with rotator cuffs and things like that. Again, we don't know what the injury is, but I wrote the article yesterday, and then I was looking at his numbers. And he made such a leap. Like, he cut his hits per nine in half, his home runs per nine down to a third, his walk rate in half, his strikeout rate, like, leapt so much, like, almost 8 points, something like that. Like, he got so good and was just so unhittable for such a long stretch, and I wrote about him like 3 times last year.
He was a fun story because he was so bad in his debut. It wasn't like he was a decent reliever who turned into an amazing one. He was a pretty bad starter, a pretty bad reliever. And then last year he was outstanding. And I think the most amazing thing is that Zips believes in him so much. Like 0.6 war doesn't seem like much, but also it has him at like 3.24 ERA, which is still extremely good for a reliever, I think, especially if he's used. I don't know. This is another thing that does he get this many innings if he pitches with that ERA? And I think probably if he can stay healthy somehow and reach that. But it's just kind of cool how much Zips believes in him.
Well, I mean, again, it's just so. I was looking at his numbers again today. Like, his fielding independent pitching is right in line with his ERA. So it's not like he was like lucky or anything like that. He's got such a. His ground ball rate is insane, too. Yeah. 60% last year. Yeah, I remember just all like April and May, it was like, this can't be real. This is fake. This is all lies and small sample size. And then by August, I was like, Jesus Christ, he's just unbeaten. He's huge, too. I just love how huge he is.
If he had a beard and got really sweaty, he'd be the perfect pitcher for this podcast. He's so close. He's a very large man who throws a baseball. But he's got to have a bunch of sweaty hair. Yeah.
It would become Hentcast. Henches cast. I don't know. Something.
Don't spoil the new name, man. It's not
coming. Oh, shoot. That's right. I'm sorry. but yeah. So I said under for him to get to 0.6 war. I think he'll still probably break that number, honestly. Like he had what, one in change last year or something like that?
Yeah, just barely over one.
Like I said in the previous article, like it's stupid. It is stupid to use wins above replacement to judge relievers because they never get more than 60 innings, like something like that. So I think I'll still probably make it. But like, again, shoulder injury and then monitored week to week is just, that's troublesome. And you wonder like what kind of form he'll be in when he does bounce back. So,
yeah, I think I'd be under, but just barely. I think it's basically a good prediction. I think he could easily shoot over too. He could just be good again as last year, but, somewhere in there. Our next one, Josh Bell. This one, obviously, the big offseason addition for the Guardians. Last year, looked really good with Washington. He came over to the Padres. I think it was part of the Soto trade. Like they got both at the same time.
Yes, he came on over with Soto, yeah.
Yeah, but, with the Nationals, he was outstanding. 143 WRC+, and then just with the Padres, absolutely tanked, which I think was buried because the Padres were so good anyway, and they made it into playoffs and made it to the NLCS, but he was terrible there. Zips kind of has him somewhere in the middle in their projections. 249, 343, 399, which seems kind of low. 114 WRC+, and only 16 home runs. I think you wrote this one too earlier in the week, but I'm saying now mine's way over this one. This seems crazy low. Although I guess, I don't know. He was only 2.5, or he was 2 war last year because his time in the Padres tanked him so much, but it's not like he's been a perennial 3-4 win player. So maybe it's not too terrible, but I just see him having so much more power than Zips projects him for. I don't know.
It is. Well, he is such Zips is going to hate a player like him because you look at his years and like they're so like good and then bad, then good and then bad. Like his entire time with the Pirates, his first year is 70-75 and 800 OPS. His first 2 years when he's kind of getting his feet wet, then 768, then 936, then 669 during the COVID year. And then when he was in Washington, like, he played 247 games there, and he hit 278, 363, 483, and then obviously just did not exist in San Diego for 53 games. So I think, as I wrote in the article, I'm inclined to take the 1,000 plate appearances he had in Washington as more credence of him being a solid player over the 210 he had in San Diego, where he was, you know, I mean, obviously you have to perform against good pitching, but he's also, it's a hellish division to play in, quite honestly. Like, all those teams are good except for the Rockies. And or even the Diamondbacks, they can pitch okay. And going up against the way that MLB had been doing the schedule, you know, you're playing a lot of in division in the last 2 months of the season. So I just, and then I think I mentioned too in the article, but NLCS, like, he was excellent. You know, going 6-for-17 with a couple walks, but he hit a home run and a double, like, against Philadelphia. He performed when the lights were the absolute brightest on him, if that's any consolation at all. And then, I don't know. I think like, because what's his projection again? 1.8,
yeah. So it's a little under what he's done in his career, but it's not like, I don't know. I just see him he's going to be comfortable this year too, which maybe is a thing because
right. His
family's near Cleveland. And he's probably going to play a little bit more DH. Like, last year's 124 games at first, 32 at DH. I would think maybe it's not quite that much this year. Maybe that hurts or helps if he's an awful first baseman. I think that'll help his value a little bit too, not being there and not being good. But I don't know. 1.8 just seems so low for him. It's one of those over, but maybe not by a ton, but definitely over.
Well, if you look at it's insane what happened with his batting average on balls in play when he went out west too. It was 324 in 2022 when he was in Washington, and then dropped down to 233. So that right there alone, I look at that and say to myself, I think he'll be better than that, you know? And then, like, his home run rate also was 1.4% in his time with the Padres, and, like, it was always somewhere between, like, 3 and 5, basically, for the rest of his career. So 3.9 was his career average otherwise. So I think he'll be all right. I don't know if he'll be a huge, huge power threat, but I think he'll be a good, solid presence in the lineup. Like, I'd love to get 2019 era Bell when he hit a 142 OPS plus with 37 home runs.
Oh, yeah, I'd be okay with that.
2020, like, I think somewhere more in this first year in Washington, I think would make sense. You know,
yeah,
because his advanced stats are insane, dude. Like, he walks so much, he has such good contact rates. Like, the dream is, of course, that some smart guy on Washington on Cleveland is like, do this, and he's like, okay, now I hit 50 home runs instead of only 35. Okay, cool.
Oh, that'd be one hell of a first year. I think it's probably
he'd probably opt out after that one.
Oh yeah. I almost wanted to write, like, try to figure out the perfect year he could have to be as good as possible but not want to opt out, because I'm sure there's a line somewhere, right? Like, he could be pretty good but also maybe not want to opt out. I don't know. I want to know what that is, like, to get the most value over 2 years. I think he'd probably be better off just having one outstanding year. But
if he replicated maybe his overall 2022, not in terms of being terrible suddenly and also being good.
Right, just average out to, like, 114.
Yeah, exactly. Just having something, because that's not really great for a first baseman, but it's not, you know, that's the kind of bat that we've been talking about Cleveland needing, is someone that stretches. Like, they already have big, big boppers. They already have other guys. Like, it'd be cool if he was, you know, the dream, but like you said, like, if what is that number? Probably somewhere like the 115 to 125 WRC plus sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Or we could use RBAT plus if you want it instead. So something more like a
133, of course, maybe. Yeah, so somewhere in there. Yeah, it's enough that I just don't know if he'd want to chance another contract. Because maybe like he's going to be 31, so maybe he wants to do it anyway, no matter what, just to try to get another longer deal. Even if he's just above average, maybe another team will give him 3 or 4 years instead of just the one with an option the Guardians gave him.
Most of the time, we talk about tech in terms of a handful of gigantic companies like Google, Meta, and Apple. But some of the most interesting stuff we find online is the product of a single person.
When you're working on your own, I think there's this beauty of being able to come up with an idea and then implement it then in that moment. You don't have to have permission from someone else. There's no red tape.
In the Vergecast series Solo Acts, we'll get to know these people, the tech they use to get stuff done, and the obstacles they face trying to compete with the giants.
Some people that I talk to and my friends are like, you know, your competitors are Zuckerberg and Musk. Like, aren't you kind of like afraid of that?
Every Monday, our friend Ashley Esqueda will be curating and hosting these interviews and sharing with us what she's learned.
I can't believe the McRib locator was originally a tornado locator.
Right.
Pretty wild.
Listen to our Solo Acts miniseries now in the Vergecast feed, anywhere you find podcasts.
Next one, Cal Quantrill. Quincy Wheeler wrote this one up. He said over on it, 31 games, 27 starts, 161 innings, 4.08 ERA, 1.5 WAR. This one seems like another easy over for me, but I also really like Cal Quantrill. As Quincy noted in the article and Zach Mizell detailed at The Athletic, he's kind of working on, he's adding a splitter and refining his curveball. So that's another kind of just spring training story that everybody's doing something, but that's a thing. Like if he gets there going, I mean, he's never really had a good changeup. So if he has a good splitter, to go with that slider and cutter he has, maybe there's something there with Quantrill. I think that could be exciting, but I think either way he's going to be over. He's also pitching in the WBC in Canada, so maybe there's going to be a case of like he comes out of the gate faster than everybody because he's already been competitive for a couple weeks. I don't know. 4.08 ERA just seems like so easily to beat for Quantrill.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think part of it is obviously Zips doesn't like pitchers like him, right? Like ground ball guys, guy who just he's what 7 strikeouts per 9 last year, stuff like that. With a vast difference. I think he probably has the biggest gulf between ERA and fielding independent pitching.
It's ERA was 3.38 and FIP was 4.12.
Yeah,
I guess that's pretty bad, but
yeah.
2021 it was worse. 2.89 ERA, 4.07 FIP. So I mean, he's always outperformed either way.
Which is more? Aaron Savale's difference of 3.86 fielding independent pitching versus a 4.92 ERA or the other way around? Jesus Christ.
Savale's is not good.
Savale's is insane. What an unlucky man. I think Quantrill can do it. Like you said, he'll throw 200 innings. It's always weird when you see, like, I love Zips for those weird numbers, 27 starts. They're like, why is he appearing in relief? What's going on here?
Listen, you got to get those Gavin Williams starts in somewhere. You just got to have Quantrill come out of the bullpen a couple times.
I guess that's fair. I understand that completely, of course. That's just logic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's 1.5 wins. I mean, again, I think he'll be one of the only thing I could think that might hinder him would be the limitations on shifts because he counts so much in pitching into his defense.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I think this is going to be one of the many examples of the shift thing isn't going to be that big a deal. I think the only thing that really is going to make any market difference is going to be the pitch clock thing, which I think will fall in his favor, especially if he can develop a splitter and just kind of really kind of work guys over that. Because a splitter would be a perfect pitch for him, very similar plane to his sinker and give him a bit more depth on the bottom of the zone. So I think that's an easy, like you said, an easy because I think he's been over 3 wins above replacement several times now, hasn't he? Maybe just the one time, just last year, I guess, because he hasn't really pitched very much otherwise, but.
Yeah, he's. I think that's pretty solidly over, unless he's hurt, obviously. But next one, the obvious closer for Cleveland, Emmanuel Clase, 74 games, 71.3 innings pitched, 26 strikeout rate, 2.27 ERA, 1.5 WAR for the projection. I think this was another Merritt Rolfing special,
and of course, he was over busy last week. Huh?
All these relievers too.
I love them, baby.
Very first article is the using WAR is not good for relievers. Let me just sign up for all those real quick. Let me just grab Eli Morgan. Let me just write about him.
I'm in spring training too. I didn't do a lot of writing over the winter.
Gotta warm up.
I'm knocking the dust off over here.
I think this is an easy over. Not even like it's going to be close. I think he's going to blow by it again.
What was the number again? I'm sorry.
1.5 WAR was the projection.
Wait, how many?
1.5.
Oh yeah, well, fucking, he'll cream that. Either.
Yeah, I mean it was 2.4 last year.
Yeah,
and I mean this year
for 70 games, he's going to strike out 100 people. Well, no, he'll strike out 74 people. He'll not allow very many runs. I mean, I mentioned it in the article. Like it happens sometimes where a relief pitcher will just have those weird collapsey years. Edwin Diaz did a couple years ago, but
I don't think he's going to have that. He's too much of a ground ball-y pitcher, I think.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Like, Diaz even with the shift ban, he's incredible.
Oh, yeah, and again, I think we're going to overplay the shift band thing a little bit. Like, some bloop singles will pop in, but, like, especially with Cleveland, they're just so athletic in the infield. Like, I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be perfectly fine, and it'll all work out positively.
That knows as much more here. Easy over. He's amazing. He's going to crush it.
Easy peasy. I can't wait to see him throw the ball very hard again, as he was doing today.
He did in spring training. He looks ready to go. He could eclipse that right now if you put him out.
Yeah, there. Man, just give it to him, baby.
Next one, Cody Morris, who looked pretty good last year, 2.28 ERA when he was in a lot of walks, but that's just kind of a debut thing. It was his rookie season, 23 innings he pitched, but of course injuries are his biggest thing. He's not the high 90s pitcher that he was coming up. He's kind of mid 90s, low 90s. If he can make it to the mound, I think is the biggest thing with him. The projections are 4.02 ERA, 0.9 WAR, 27 games, 17 starts, 71 total innings. Again, this is one, if he gets to health, maybe he's way over this. Maybe he's right around this. I think he could probably be better than a 4.0 TRA. He's got, I think he'd just be better than that if he, but the problem is health. He's out right now because of lat discomfort. They're going to take him slow in the spring, and I'm sure when he comes up, I don't even know if they'd have him start 17 games. I think he would be almost entirely in the bullpen with how slow they're going to probably take him to get him back up. He's got a sky-high spin rate on his fastball. Maybe if he's in the bullpen, he can ramp it up to closer to what he was before all the injuries. But right now, he's just a bunch of question marks. He's got a nice changeup. He's got a cutter that has a lot of, I think it's a sneaky good cutter. There's a lot of movement on it. But yeah, I do like Cody Morris a lot. I think his strikeout rate can be high. I think he'll just be end up a bullpen guy at least this year and just make sure his arm can handle a bunch of innings and then maybe throw him back out there again. Because he's never even thrown more than 100 innings in any minor league season. He came really close in 2019, which was his debut season. But yeah, the innings on his arm are just not there. And I think this year they're going to take it slow. They've already said they're taking it slow through the spring to get him ramped up. So he probably won't even start at the beginning of the year. And when he gets there, he will, I would assume, be a reliever at least for a little bit.
He is from Columbia, Maryland, and is not listed as one of the notable people on the Columbia, Maryland Wikipedia page.
Who was notable from Columbia, Maryland before?
Several people. Steve Lombardozzi. Who else? Let's see. I don't know who that is. Oprah, for some reason.
Well, all right. She's probably a little bit more popular.
Well, this is right now. Oprah Winfrey. Lived there while she was working at WJZ from 76 to 83. Yeah, it doesn't count at all.
This is Cody Morris's hometown, and you're going to put Oprah over him?
Aaron Magruder, creator of the Boondocks. Oh, there we go.
Is he actually born there, though? Or did he just...
Yeah, born in Edward Norton, born there.
There you go. All right.
As long as I'm sorry, no, he made his professional debut at age 8 at Toby's Dinner Theater in the town center.
What about Cody Morris' Zips projections?
I'll be honest, I barely remember seeing him pitch last year.
I was surprised at how good he was. I thought in my mind, I think I was remembering his first couple of spots where he was terrible.
Yeah.
And then I looked and was like, wow, he was actually.
Like, I'm looking at his face right now and I'm looking at his stats and I'm like.
He has a generic face, to be fair.
He really is. This is a creative player right here. This is the default creative player. Oh, he's got a nice smile and he's, okay, anyway.
Yeah, but he's the default, yeah.
What was the projection again? I'm sorry. I have a different website than you do.
Got baseball. Well, it's his R-Bat, man. His R-Arm or whatever.
Why would he have R-Bat, man?
His R-Arm. I don't know.
Don't be ridiculous. Don't be utterly ridiculous.
Don't be a rube.
Come on, you clown. yeah, all his stats are on here are normal.
Yeah. I think it comes under. That's what Chris said in his article, which I agree with. Pretty much all of his points is he laid it out that it's the injury, the rotation is full as it is. Relievers don't get a ton of war anyway in the Cleveland. Even the bullpen is pretty full. So I think it's going to be a problem of getting him innings and when he does.
Because they're projecting 71 innings.
Which includes 17 starts for some reason.
Again, I love projections because of how we all know it's computers. It's just like, a number he's never had also. He's never pitched that much.
No.
I mean, there's always the question of who are going to be those three or four other guys who are just kind of, you know, there and back from AAA to the majors or for spot starts. You know, there's a lot of innings to fill. There's 162 games. I mean, Quantrill, four guys are going to eat up about 120 of them.
Obviously, Quantrill is going to get four relief innings for some reason.
Yeah, he'll come in for four or five weird appearances. but there's a lot of, you know, there's 2,000 innings that they have to cover, and like where are all those pitchers? And is Cody Morris going to be one of those guys? Maybe. I mean, he's definitely a guy. I don't think he's one of the guys, so he could be just another one of the guys. So getting to 0.9 wins above replacement is not unfeasible. I prefer it didn't happen. I prefer they had better pitching, but maybe he could be that pitcher too. So we'll see. Yeah.
Kind of just up in the air. It's hard to know with him, especially like.
His minors numbers are so ridiculous. Like,
That's when he was like hitting 98, though.
Right, exactly. Before.
I think he had Tommy John 1 year, and then he's had more shoulder stuff. So it's been rough for him, and I wish him the best. Obviously, it'd be great if he came back and was amazing. But I think at least this year that he's going to be taken slow and probably won't reach that. So mine's under two, just like Chris's was.
Yeah, I think if he can get to half a win, then that'd be a successful year for him. Because I another guy I don't want to see pitch 50 innings, you know, like yeah. I'm not saying he'll be as bad as Brian Shaw was, but you know, even Baseball Reference's projections aren't horrid. 3.48 ERA, 62 innings pitched. I mean, it's an effective, relatively effective pitcher.
Oh, yeah, 3.48.
One of many guys that we've written about over the last, you know, several weeks that the less you see of him, the better. Oh, drafted by the Orioles. Oh, that's cute. Little hometown kid. a guy who the less you see of him, the better, probably, honestly.
So our last one for this week is Mike Zunino, the other kind of the 1B acquisition of the offseason for the Guardians.
I can't believe they got Mike Zunino. Oh,
could be really good. I mean, he's had 33 home runs in the past, but he's also, again, injuries. He had thoracic outlet syndrome in his, weirdly enough, his non-throwing arm, I believe, which is not something that usually happens. So he's got to recover from that and come back. But, I mean, if this is a guy where they paid him essentially nothing, $6 million for a year, he could be a huge bargain. Basically, whatever he does is just extra compared to what they paid to get him.
Oh, here's a bad joke. Hey, Matt, can I have nothing then, if that's nothing to you?
Anyway. if I was a million, if I was a billionaire, sure, I'd give you seven of them. But if he come back, if he's back and healthy, then I think he's perfectly fine. The only thing with him, like, he doesn't have a chance to struggle or be injured because Bo Naylor is going to be breathing down his neck the whole time if he proves himself in AAA. Like, the first time Zunino slips up, because the Guardians paid him essentially nothing, I think they won't hesitate to just make him be the bench guy and let Bo Naylor take over. So Chris said over on this one, which isn't a terrible prediction, I don't think. He could be really good and be over 2.3 WAR is what Zips had him at, 105 WRC plus. But I think he probably comes under just because the injury slows him down a bit. And then I think at some point Bo Naylor just takes over and then we never hear of Mike Zunino again. He just kind of drifts off into free agency next year.
I mean, 2.3 wins above replacement in 86 games. Jesus.
he's also a really good defensive catcher.
Oh, yeah. That's part of it. Defensively, he's incredible. Like, at a position to be barely above average by WRC+. Plus. I mean, if he can put up this exact stat line, I'm more than happy with that. I mean, obviously, seeing if it hit 201, I once again, I'm like, oh, well, it's a catcher. Of course he hits bad.
But 18 home runs? Hell yeah.
Yeah, 18 dingers. I mean, I only care about RBIs. So, yeah, 44 RBI. Like, but
ribbies.
Our ribbies. We love a good ribby, don't we, folks? But, yeah, the defense is what will matter here, I think, because, like you said, Bo Naylor is there, and he'll be there sooner rather than later, especially if the back continues to play. I haven't really seen how well he's doing in spring training, but also it doesn't matter. 2.3 wins. I would say under on that one as well. That's a number he's only crossed twice. And, like, he did three times, actually. And when he did cross it, it was insane. Like, that year he had in Seattle, 251, 331, 509. Or it's first, that one year in Tampa, 216, 301, 559. Good Lord, I hate batting lines like that, man. Striking out 35% of the time. Oh, I hate three true outcomes. Oh, it's so boring.
Exactly what he has at his best. But
God. I guess it can't be all Stephen Kwan's all the way down. Oh, well.
Just eight of them. No, we don't need nine. It's fine. Just mostly Stephen Kwan's. I think under two, just because it'll be close. But if he's over, it's going to be a really good season for... If he's over, everybody's in a good place at that point. I think the Guardians and...
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
And good for him, too. Did you know he was a third overall pick? I forgot about that back in 2012.
I did vaguely know that.
I forgot he was such a high draft pick, but maybe he's going to be good.
Paid off. I mean, look at that. 18 wins. Like, that's not bad. That's better than your average for a third overall pick, I think. Yeah. Like, that's a great career he's had so far. That's, you know, better than 95%, I think, of major leaguers all time.
All right, Marin. How about you want to play a game?
Yeah, would you like to play a game?
Do you want to play a game?
I do.
So this game is, of course, America's favorite game. It's called McDowell versus the Field. This is a game where I'm going to give you a random set of stats, essentially. Because Sam McDowell, if people didn't know, he's always a guy that just kind of shows up when you're looking for any kind of Cleveland history pitching stat. Sam McDowell will be there, no matter what.
He's always top six, something like that. Yeah,
he's always pitched in the '60s, bounced around, retired in '75, but he feels like a criminally underrated pitcher, despite his success and the awesome nickname.
I think he was mean, is part of it. I think he was kind of a mean... They had a lot of mean guys on Cleveland.
He's an old mean man now, too.
Him, Gaylord Perry, just a bunch of mean guys that nobody liked.
But yeah, he just kind of shows up in all these stats. So this game, called McDowell versus the Field, is I'm going to give you a set of stats, and you have to decide whether it's Sam McDowell or literally any other pitcher in Cleveland history.
Oh, cool.
And if I hear any keystroke, I'll snap this podcast in half. No Googling. It's very important. You don't. Oh, God, I hear it. Right. You ready for this question, Mary?
Go ahead.
Over a 3-year period.
Oh, God.
This pitcher was seventh in all of baseball in ERA, with the highest strikeout through nine among qualified starters. Talk it out, Mayor. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know your answer's locked in.
So wait, over a three-year period.
Could be any three-year period.
Any three-year period.
This pitcher was seventh in baseball in ERA with the highest strikeout per nine among qualified starters.
That's gotta be Sutton Sam McDowell.
Is that your final answer?
It is final answer. Lock it in.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It sure was Sam McDowell. You got it. From 1964 to 1966, Sam McDowell had a 2.53 ERA, struck out 10.21 batters per nine, which in the 60s was ridiculous.
Just dominant.
He was the only starting pitcher over that streak with double-digit strikeouts per nine.
And in the 60s, too. I guess that was before you were the pitcher.
But still, I mean, in the 60s, like, he was the only one striking out more than 10 per nine. He was insane. Question two. This pitcher has the two highest FWAR seasons of any Cleveland starter.
Ever?
Ever. The two highest individual seasons. One and two. Think about all the great pitchers Cleveland has had.
I don't think. No, that is not Sam McDowell. I don't think he threw enough innings.
You lock it in?
I lock it in.
Are you kidding me?
Damn it, man. No. It is Sam McDowell. He had a 9.4 FWAR in 1969.
Jesus Christ.
8.7 FWAR in 1965.
I thought Louis Tiant had a high one, and I thought that
Gaylord Perry
must have gotten there once. Like
Gaylord Perry was the next closest in 1972, 7.6. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah, he threw so many.
Yeah, Sam McDowell. So good. God, he's so good.
What a force. So,
I kind of thought the first two would be harder, and you might miss them both, so this one's kind of a gimme, but here's number three. This pitcher's first name starts with S, and he has the highest strikeout per nine season in Cleveland history.
Wait a minute. Now I feel like it's a trick.
No, I thought the first two would be hard. I was trying to give you an easy one, because I wanted to hear my correct sounds. I wasn't sure you did any of them. So.
Wait, this Cleveland pitcher...
Uh-huh. First name starts with S, and he has the highest strikeout per nine season in Cleveland history.
Isn't that Shane Bieber?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, it is.
Yes!
It is Shane Bieber, 14.20 in 2020.
God, he was so good that year.
It's a full season. Nobody asked questions. 2020 was a regular season.
We ain't talking anymore.
Yeah. Shane Bieber was great and fine, and it all worked out.
As everyone knows, whenever it was a good thing that benefited your team, 2020 was a real year. Whenever it was bad and fake, stupid fake year that doesn't count, we're throwing
Mickey
the whole
Mouse
thing
year,
out.
Unless you're Shane Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
Next question. Behind Shane Bieber, among starters with at least 500 innings pitched, this pitcher had the highest career strikeout per nine.
In Cleveland history.
In Cleveland. This is all Cleveland, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's got to be Sam McDowell, then.
Final answer.
Final answer.
Got to be an error.
Danny Salazar is second.
Oh,
10.46 career strikeout.
Oh, that feels like cheating. Oh, come on. He pitched like six games a year over the course of a
minimum 500 innings pitched. Danny Salazar, 10.46. That was a question.
How many innings did he pitch?
Over 500. I don't have it written down, but it was over 500.
I wonder how many innings. Man, we really believed in him for a while.
We sure did. He looked really fun. Well, I mean, obviously, he has the second highest career.
He ruled for a minute there. He
was really fun.
Wasn't he a relief pitcher for a year there, I think? And he was like really effective.
He came in once, one game, and he just looked way out of shape. But now he makes TikToks, and they're fun. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He's doing good.
I liked him.
Next question. Same question as last one, but bump that innings pitched up to 2,000. So we're talking the big boppers here in Cleveland history.
Pitched that's a ton gotta of innings. Be Sam McDowell.
Is that one locked in?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, he got it.
You sure got it, man. That's Sam McDowell.
He got him.
He got it. 9.21.
Is this why you were asking for clips?
It was.
On the Slack.
The happy ones are easy to find. It's the other ones that were harder. I had to look through so many Rick Manning plays, but it was worth it.
For listeners out there, on our internal Slack channel, Matt just asks, and I'm trying to find that one clip where Rick Manning says, "Are you shitting me?" Not that he's putting a post together, not this dumb game.
It's for a very important reason, man.
We need to repurpose these for other things later, too.
Oh, I'm going to use these all year round. so this will be our last one.
Okay.
An urban legend exists in which this player was rumored to have 40 no-hitters in high school.
What?
He was rumored to have 40 no-hitters.
I don't think that was Sam McDowell, but I think it's cool that it is.
Wait, so is that Sam McDowell or the field?
That is the field.
Final answer.
Lock it in.
Do you watch much baseball anymore?
Man, you roasted me on that one. Damn.
No, it was not Sam McDowell. It was Sam McDowell. Sam McDowell supposedly had 40 no-hitters in his senior year at Central Catholic High School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Although he later revealed in a book that his coach exaggerated a little bit and said he had 15, but there's actually only 9.
9 no-hitters.
Yeah, it's still amazing. It's not 40, but... the legend still lives for Sam.
Didn't Kershaw have a 27 strikeout perfect game one time in high school or something like that?
That sounds like a very Clayton Kershaw thing. Yeah.
God, he probably had a home run the same game.
Yeah. So that was America's favorite game, McDowell versus the field. I mainly just wanted to use those clips because I put a.
Well, we can't let those go to waste. Let's have to show up again later on.
But yeah, we'll have more games in the future because that was fun.
We still have spring training, and then we can talk about real baseball for a few weeks, and then once we get to June and July, we're just bored. There you go.
So earlier today, I asked on Facebook and Twitter if anybody had any questions for us. We haven't done it in a while, and it's fun answering questions we get, especially now when there's not a whole lot. In particular,
all we have is questions.
All we have is you, the listener, asking us questions. Our first one, TJ Guthrie on Facebook asks, I'm seeing a lot of people claiming the Guards have a top 5 infield in the Major League Baseball. Where do you think we stand? And I thought about that one.
Yeah. Good one. I mentioned to Matt before we started recording this question to derail me for 45 minutes at work. Trying to go, maybe.
Do they?
So I'm just kind of ballparking it. And then I remember that Trey Turner is on the Phillies now. I mean, just off the top of my head, I would say the Blue Jays, the Mets, the Padres. And then I kind of ran out of gas. You know, it's like.
Astros? Are they still
the Cardinals? I mean, their corners are incredible. Their corners were 1 and 2 in MVP voting. I feel like
that could carry them. I don't care who's in them. Like Tommy
Evans. Right, exactly. They could have a dead man playing second, and they don't. They have a pretty good player.
Camera just cuts every time he's
laying there. I don't know about him.
And the graphic still shows they have the best infield in baseball.
Top five.
Does this count catcher and like DH? Because DH is going to swap with first base a lot.
I don't consider it counting either of those specifically because technically a catcher is not in the infield, right?
So it's just the four.
So I would say if they don't, they're sixth. It's all about like how you view how adding Trey Turner to an infield of who's even on that fucking team, Rhys Hoskins, Gene Segura, and Alec Bohm, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what that.
No.
I feel like the Guardians are better than that one, at least.
Yeah, right? I agree with you. Yeah, Mets.
Blue Jays, are they one?
Blue Jays, I mean, yeah, that's an excellent infield right there. Because they have, they got Matt Chapman. So you got Chapman, Guerrero, Bichette, and then I don't really care who's playing second base.
Again, another dead man. Why is there so many dead men at second?
They gotta sign players. Guys, come on.
I think them and the Cardinals are probably 1-2, and then...
Well, I mean, the Braves have a pretty good infield as well. I would have said the Dodgers is an obvious one, but
Gavin Lux
kind with of Lux being hurt now, that kind of puts a damper on that. I mean, obviously, whoever they get to play shortstop now is going to put up 5.5 wins above replacement because they're devil wizards.
The Mets certainly
have a. At worst, it's on par, and so maybe that could be it. Because I mean, Alonzo McNeil, Lindor, and then if they had gotten Correa, it would have been absurd.
Oh yeah, but that's no doubt.
Escobar's pretty good himself. Honestly, actually, look at that. Like,
I think they're close. Like you said, either fifth or sixth. They
are comfortably a very like top flight elite infield, and if, assuming that, you know, depending on what we get out of. What's his name? Out of Bell. And then just assuming last year wasn't a fluke from Jimenez. Like, I'll be honest with you. Like, I would put Jimenez and Ramirez up against Goldschmidt and Arenado. I'd probably come out wanting a little bit, but less than you think. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're both great, but like to say that those two guys are not also wonderful, like we're talking about a guy who was worth 7 wins and 7 wins. These guys were worth 6 and change. So it's like obviously they're better, but
yeah. Talk to me again next year when Ahmed Rosario might be gone, and then you've got either Arias or Freeman or somebody else who's up and had a little bit of training this year and is ready to go next. That's a that could be top five. But for now, they're kind of on the board. I think.
I agree. Yeah, obviously, what's his name is going to start aging a little bit, but figuring out the first base situation,
Josh Naylor, I guess.
I honestly think Naylor here is the X factor because it's going to be a platoon between him and Bell to a degree at first base. Like Bell's going to play every day because he's a switch hitter. But if last year it was just him getting Naylor getting back into form and like if he's healthy all year, and able to hit lefties to even a league average rate, I think he's going to be a great first baseman. So I think that that you can certainly say that they're top five, and you won't be laughed out of the room at this point, because there's a lot of, like, I don't know. You look at the Braves, right? Olsen, Albies, Swanson, Riley. That's really good. Albies got hurt last year. I mean, when he's healthy, he's second baseman. They're going to hit 30 home runs, so that's pretty good.
I think they're ahead of the Guardians. Austin Riley's super good.
He is. He keeps on evolving and getting better as a player. Like his first year, the first good year, was like, oh, yeah, whatever. Look at that BABIP garbage. Then he's like, no, actually, it's normal. I'm like, oh, shit, it is normal. This is what he does. Oh, God.
Next one, at Mikey Locko on Twitter, asks, do you like the Guardian style of offense with the new rule changes so they seek out more sluggers? So this was perfect timing for this one. I don't know if Mikey saw this article and was kind of referencing it, but 538 made up their own stat, which was kind of tongue-in-cheek, I think, but they called it Manfred, or the metric for assessing negative or favorable rule effect dynamics. Basically looking at how much the rule changes, which of course, like bigger bases, the tempo of a pitcher and shifting, seeing how much those will probably affect teams. No surprise here, the Guardians came out on top by quite a bit because they didn't shift a whole lot last year. They have pitchers who work fast already, and they're a fast team, so it's obviously the base running is going to benefit them. I feel like the Guardians have been working towards this the whole time anyway, so they are...
It does seem that way.
...extremely prepared. Either they got lucky or not, but the funny thing about the Manfred stat is that it's like the Guardians, which I would absolutely believe they did this on purpose, that they're good, but then the other three are the Rockies, Royals, and D-backs, and Brewers. So most of them are just bad teams who... probably didn't hit very hard anyway.
Brewers are just National League Guardians at this point. Like I see so much of a kinship between the two of them. So
yeah, well they're trying to be, but I don't think they're doing it quite as successfully as the Guardians are. They're definitely trying to get there. I think the Brewers are, but yeah, I think like the Rockies, I don't think are exactly planning ahead as much as the Guardians are. The Royals and D-backs are not good. The D-backs gonna have some.
The D-backs I think will be better than we think. They weren't bad last year. You know, I think they'll be a better team. I think they deserve a little bit of not respect, but you know, a curious glance every now and again. Much like with the Angels, you kind of forget they exist because they keep on not wearing their cool uniforms and they play in a warehouse and they play in Arizona, which is where you do spring training, not normal baseball. What are you doing here?
I think they're going to be good. I think everything benefits them essentially. I don't know if they did it on purpose or just kind of luck of the draw, but they are prepared for all the rule changes.
I mean, they were second lowest in home runs last year.
Yeah.
Like second, and they won 93 games.
They're ready to hit ground balls and fly around the bases and hit those bigger bases.
That being said, I would prefer if they were 20th in home runs.
You want some big... Well, they got Josh Bell now, so...
Well, we're talking about... I'm hoping for an additional 25 home runs, basically.
Yeah, which I think you get from him. Like, well, who's replacing Owen Miller? That's
well, that's the thing. Yeah, exactly. Like you're bringing Owen Miller in. You have Zunino coming in. I think they've added just enough power because, like, I think we got a really good demonstration of what playing on the razor's edge that Cleveland did all last year looks like when you come up against a team that can actually hit home runs. Because I'm sorry, like, I know it was a 3-2 Yankees win in the divisional series, but it was not that close. Like having the ability to just change the shape of the game in a heartbeat, as opposed to having to grind out a run, like it's nice to make your life a little bit easier. I'm probably not the only person who has this weird, you know, expectation. I suppose that guys like Kwan will, because he hit what, 6 home runs. Like I think he can hit 10 home runs this year. I think Ramirez, hopefully his hand stays healthy all year, and he could be a 35 home run guy. Jimenez might hit a couple more. I think Naylor can get up to 25 home runs. Hedges hit 7 last year. I think that if Zunino was healthy, that we'd get that up to 20. So like bits and pieces where it seems like it's all kind of starting. You know, they gave Franmil Reyes 280 at bats and he hit 9 home runs. Like we all forget how bad it was. They gave him 280 at bats and they gave Owen Miller 472 plate appearances. I think we're doing a really... Like Oscar Mercado had 254 plate appearances.
Yeah,
this team is always so weird.
Yeah, we're an opening day and the next season it's always weird.
But then you start looking at some other guys, like someone like Will Brennan, not a big power threat necessarily. He hit 1 home run last year. Obviously, it's only 45 plate appearances, but again, to answer the question directly, I would like more home runs. I think that the style of play stuff might benefit them some, but the bigger base, I don't know. I think Jerry's still on the bigger base thing. The shifting thing, like you said, probably not a big deal anyway because they're so athletic up the middle. But
they can only use sluggers, I think.
I would like them to get 160 home runs. I think that would be a nice number as a team. That would make life a little bit easier. And if they can do that, honestly, I think they'd walk away with the division.
Like, yeah, oh, I think they probably will anyway.
If you kind of just look down the top home runs, Cleveland was 29th out of 30. The only one behind them was Detroit at 110 home runs. Like, they were so bad. But then, like, you start looking up, and it's so many other bad teams, like Washington, Oakland, Kansas City, Tampa Bay for some reason, but then Miami, Colorado, the White Sox. Like, if they can out-home run the White Sox, I think that is a good goal. Even Minnesota had 178 last year, and, like, they were better than, you know, they were just injured constantly. So I love the way they play baseball, to be clear. I've mentioned before, I love Stephen Kwan. I think Jose Ramirez is the absolute perfect baseball player. Jimenez is wonderful. But I would like it if they could just
squeeze some more home runs somewhere.
Right, exactly. You know, like, I think Straw will hit 3 home runs this year. I don't know. You know,
it for him. That's a big offensive year for Melish.
Well, I think he'll be better this year than he was last year because it's hard to be worse.
So our last question, we'll wrap it up. Anthony Lavelle on Facebook, he asked, should Will Brennan be the fourth outfielder on the opening day roster, or should he start the year in Columbus so he can get more everyday at-bats? I don't know. This is a tough one. I think he's going to get the at-bats up here because he's a lefty and he can platoon with Straw and Gonzalez. I think you leave him up and you give him plenty of at-bats on the major league level. Like, I don't think he's going to be a typical fourth outfielder where he's just sitting around and is just occasionally replacing a guy who's tired. I think you straight up platoon him with some guys and get him a bunch of at-bats.
Oh, no, I agree. I think we're going to see a lot of churn with the young guys. I mean, I'm not the – I've said it several times on the podcast. I've written about it, but, you know, in a pseudo kind of hot takey way. But Oscar Gonzalez is not a sure thing coming into 2022. We all liked him. We had some good moments, but I don't know. I mean, his batting profile is weird. Will Brennan is there. He's shown some talent, I think. I don't know what you can extrapolate from, again, 45 plate appearances, 15 hits, like – I don't think he'll hit 357 this time around. But, again, he sprays the ball around. He has a similar approach somewhat to Kwan, not quite as ridiculously elite in similar ways. But, yeah, I don't know. I'd say keep him up, like you said, because I think there's – what else is there for him? It's like,
yeah, there's nothing left for him to do in AAA.
Like, what is he going to do? When he was in Columbus last year, he hit 316, 367, 451, right? And, I mean, Akron, when he was there for, 36 games, he hit 311, 382, 504, like – there's nothing more he can do there. He beat the piss out of the ball, and it's time to let him learn how to hit a major league pitch, a curveball, you know? And if he can, he can. And if not, well, then we have other guys we need to look at also, quite honestly. Like, not to overly commodify these guys, but, like, there's a lot of young guys in the farm system, and Cleveland wants to build a winner, and the pathway to doing that is getting the young guys some time. Like, I think bring him up and keep him as a fourth outfielder, and then who knows? Maybe this time next year we'll be talking about how they have him and Kwan ensconced in the corner outfield and still are running Straw out there.
Can you believe Miles Straw was on the opening day roster last year?
Or things like that, you know? Yeah, exactly.
Miles Straw, the guy who didn't last a week and they cut him. What is going on?
Yeah, he actually hit a negative batting average as of April 15th. It was incredible. He hit the ball backwards. He actually put runs on the board for the other team. We don't know how he did it.
On that note, Merritt, that'll do it for us this week. If you haven't already, follow us on Covering the Corner, Facebook and Twitter. I'm Matt R-O-Y on Twitter. Merritt is at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. If you haven't already, leave a review for the podcast. Wherever you listen to them, let us know how you like it. And Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll be there.